Please be seated. Well, this cozy location with its twinkling lights, our beautiful modernist stained glass windows, our Advent tree with its cooling, I would say even like jazzy blue lights. You see that kind of stuff in a jazz club. Well, it's not really what you'd think to encounter when we turn to talk of burning with unquenchable fire. And yet, every second Sunday of Advent, in all three synoptic gospels, the Christian church ventures from tens of thousands of cozy or grand or not so grand spaces via our collective imagination, not where snow on snow on snow is falling, but into the sun-baked wilderness with its scorpions and sharp rocks and thorned bushes in order to meet the ill-clad prophet, John the Baptist. He with his dubious diet and his insistence that we need more than what the culture and its various institutions, political or religious, are peddling. We need, he says, a radical change of mind, so that the path we choose is not the flat, easy one, the status quo that civilization has trod from time immemorial, but the rock-strewn path up the steep terrain that, if followed, allows the world, possibly, just some glimpse of the grand vista of God's peace. And when I put it that way, when I attempt to use poetic, soaring rhetoric, I find that my heart and my mind, well, they nod yes. If that's what Advent means, I'm in. I mean, I want this flourishing life of God's hope, peace, joy, and love. Don't we all? Like the Judeans who submitted to John's baptism, which was a new and fitting symbol in a land in which water was maybe the most precious commodity of all. We too don't want to waste God's efforts on our behalf. We too long for a fresh start, like tapping update now on your computer after we get a notification that a system upgrade is available. Something that will fix our internal glitches. We make fresh resolutions. We pitch to ourselves a new diet regime. Personally, I'd favor just a general Mediterranean diet, not John's locust or insect-focused one, even if he dolloped it with honey. A new commitment to prayer, to participate in something, anything, but the doom scrolling many of us are addicted to. And then we realize it's not so easy, is it? If it was, we'd all do it. I mean, our current path has such a long backstory that resists easy change. Our families and genetics and past choices, they're all part of it. And so our stories can seem set beyond the power of any fresh resolution, any simple dousing with water. Our past rises up like a bully and says, "Hey, where do you think you're going?" And when we look at the backstory of our culture, Our society, our world, well, it feels even more set, doesn't it? We might bravely mutter along with Martin Luther King Jr. that the arc of history is long, but that it bends towards justice. But often that feels like we're just whistling in the dark. Sin has been set in motion, and changing our minds feels like a futile effort in the face of forces that influence everything and everybody. This feeling of futility is why we may hear John's preaching as a confirmation of our judgment towards the way the world is, and then that, of course, boomerangs towards ourselves. But as in last week's gospel about the coming of the Son of Man, John's metaphors aren't what they appear to be at first blush. The axe lying at the root of the trees, or chaff burning with unquenchable fire, is not meant like some sort of slasher movie to give us this visceral image of horrible destruction, but rather of evil being cut down. And to use an obvious pun, just have to say, master of puns, John Laidlaw, really groaned at this one this morning. Sin being incinerated. I know, I warned you. God comes with a winnowing fork to separate the husky chaff in our souls from the true grain that the seeds might yet nourish us and become fresh bread, the bread of life. So the weight of our past is heavy, but with God's help, John says, it is not fate. Hope is real and peace is not impossible. Peace is not impossible. Now, how might this actually work in practice? How does God winnow, chop, and incinerate? I mean, I just said, if metanoia was easy, well, we'd all be doing it. So how does this actually work out in practice? We have an ally in increasingly demonstrable and compelling research from social science, which says that the toughest changes are enabled by our partnerships with a loving spiritual community. Last week, I shared about some of my one of the great privileges of my life, which has been working alongside members of AA at different points in my ministry. And it turns out that to root out alcoholism, you need far more than willpower. This because, like the sin that has so deeply infected the world systems we find ourselves in, that so deeply impacts all of us, the disease of alcoholism, its tendrils are impossible to disentangle from how our brain and psyche works. And so what we need is in some way to fully enter this spiritual community, not just come to church, if you will, but fully enter it. And when we do, hopefully, this is what we attempt here at St. Philip, to build and to find a loving, supportive community that identifies with us, that struggles alongside, that dares to be a place where we can feel safe enough to hear the truth about our condition, not just the diagnosis, but the hopefulness of the cure. And so when we then project that sort of understanding back onto John, we can say, man, that guy's weird. That guy has strange antics. He's got this new liturgy of baptism, But it's pretty clear that he's not just out in the wilderness doing something for himself. He's doing it for Israel. He's doing it for people. He's loving people with his message. Tough love, we might say, but it is love. The ego cages we all live in do not help us see clearly. They do not help challenge or get to the root of our deepest needs. For that, we need a kind of objectivity, the objectivity of God working through the love of others. To get out of this cage, as AA participants know, there's another crucial step: helping others who are in the same boat as ourselves. During their 11th and 12th steps, AA participants turn to prayer and meditation, often praying the St. Francis prayer, that one we sang in our pre-service music. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. We humans, we spend a lot of time trying to feel peaceful. We take drugs, we drink, we shop, we give ourselves to recreation, often to quell the restlessness, the voice of discontent, of pain even, of trauma. Paradoxically, it's only when we change our minds, turn from trying to find peace on our own terms, and pray to become together instruments of God's peace, that we have half a chance of becoming more peaceful. When we begin to discover that our own small actions matter in the lives of others, the sharing of meals with neighbors, the prayers of healing, stepping across an ethnic divide, making friends with somebody from First Nations culture, encouraging each other in the face of disappointment, then we find we're creating, we're enabling peace. We're bridging towards it in ourselves and helping others do the same. Maybe all of us at one time or another have felt like that cut down stump in our first reading. That stump, that stalk that's been cut down, was a symbol of Israel beyond repair. Maybe it's the ultimate symbol of our past bullying us. I thought of the golden spruce that was cut down in Haida Gwaii, an act of violence in 1997. How many of you remember this incident? Yeah. This genetically mutated spruce that became a symbol, a sacred symbol for the Haida. Golden needles. And when a misguided environmentalist chopped it down as a protest against the logging industry, it caused a wave of grief and international outrage. What is less known is that some stalk from the tree was salvaged. And if those of you have a bulletin, and I think maybe we have a picture of it on the screen. Thank you, Clay. You'll see that the saplings, different saplings, were actually taken from its stalk. And the tree is coming back in a different form, but with the same genetic code. A shoot shall come from the stump of Jesse. Jesse, of course, is David's father. From the kingly line, something new is happening. The Messiah is coming. Peace is not impossible. God, it turns out, is only in the business of doing good, whether it's through the metaphors of destruction that seem to be rampant in the Old Testament, but now repurposed in the preaching of John and in others. God is only in the business of rescuing us from the prisons of habits that are wrecking us, of growing new shoots from what looks like unpromising stumps. God is only in the business of calling you and I to the difficult dignity of metanoia, of waking up each day, as people do who are part of AA groups, and saying, today I have to make a new choice to keep following the path. God is always in the business of calling us into a society of friends in which we become for each other instruments of peace. May it be so in this wonderful community and through our lives. Amen.